sound is calling. The Suwanee Perry Popolo Music Festival is back and online with free jazz, noise, punk, new music, spoken word, electronic, avant-rock, sound art, and dance parties. Over 60 artists performing from Montreal, Chicago, Philadelphia, Sioux Lookout, Toronto, Mexico City, Brussels, Berlin, Tehran, Kampala, and Nairobi. Heed the call between June 3rd and 21st at suwanneeperrypopolo.org.
Following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing. On. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Friday edition of CKUT's Community News Program, Off the Hour. Today is June 11th. My name is Brian Jefferson, and I will be your host today. CKUT broadcasts from the unceded traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Kanyekahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
For
cauliflower,
confusion, creation,
pickle, K for
kitten,
cam,
seat, wait, fan, roof, seat, U, unbearable,
U is for underground,
oh, yeah,
umbrella,
T, trite,
tremendous,
torment,
tire,
C, K,
I can't think of a U one,
T,
F is for famous,
fun, fumble, M is for Montreal.
First, news. Several Quebec regions, including Montreal, will enter a yellow zone on June 14th. The province is split into zones depending on their level of COVID cases. The province says elementary schools through universities can reopen. Up to two households will officially be allowed to gather indoors or share a table inside restaurants. And Quebec's Minister of Education announced some students will no longer be required to wear masks in class for the rest of 2021. Minister François Roberge says elementary through high school students must still wear masks in spaces like hallways and school buses. And the Grand Chief of the Mohawk Council of Kenesidage weighed in on Quebec's new language law. Bill 96 aims to make French the only official language of the province and recognize the province's nationhood. Grand Chief Serge Otsi-Simon says the Quebec government must include protections of indigenous languages, and the bill amounts to a, quote, second colonization of First Nation people and their territories, end quote. And community rights groups met yesterday outside of Metro Bonaventure in support of Jatinder Singh. Solidarity Across Borders, or SAB, says he's facing deportation back to his home country of India on June 15th. Singh is at least a third person facing deportation that SAB has rallied behind in the last 4 months. And the Canadian developer of the Keystone XL pipeline canceled the project this week. TC Energy aimed to bring crude oil to Nebraska. The Keystone and the Dakota Access pipelines have been the subject of years of protests by the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. A Montreal student group will stage a protest next week against the construction of a different pipeline called the Trans Mountain in British Columbia.
CKUT
Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
One thing we've all learned from COVID-19 is that something small can spread quickly, like a ripple. If enough of us do our part by getting vaccinated, we can start a wave. A wave of Canadians helping each other return to the people and places we love. We can all help by getting vaccinated. Learn more at canada.ca/COVID vaccine. A message from the Government of Canada.
Welcome back to CKUT's Friday Off the Hour. The time is 5:05 p.m. My name is Brian Jefferson. Up first on this episode of Off the Hour, Dollarama workers and their supporters gathered this week to demand better treatment by the company. They have been asking for this for over a year. The gathering was outside of Metro de la Savane, which is close to one of Dollarama's largest distribution centers in Montreal. Mustafa Hennaway is part of the Immigrant Work Center.
The Immigrant Workers Center, we've had a long-standing campaign around Dollarama for the explicit reason that in its warehouses and distribution centers, it's very much like Amazon, right? So it is brutally hard work. People have high quotas that they have to meet every day. All of these workers are recent immigrants, mostly from Africa, Haiti, and South Asia. And none of them have permanent jobs because they're all hired through temp agencies, which means that they're hired and fired at any given moment. And so for the number of years, we've been demanding that Dollarama actually hire people directly to end the kind of abuse that we see at Dollarama constantly.
Joel Samadal has more.
Gaurav Sharma is an ex-Dollarama employee and part of the Immigrant Workers Center. He was at the gathering this part Wednesday, which was co-organized by the Temporary Agency Workers Association.
My name is Gaurav Sharma. I'm from India. I'm working with Immigrant Workers Center, and I'm a former employee of Dollarama warehouse. And I'm doing here. I'm doing this job since 2019 till September 2020 as a pallet builder.
What was your experience as a worker in Dollarama like?
My experience, I faced a lot of situations up and downs during my tenure over there. When I started my job, I didn't know about what is the job. And during training, I didn't know about my job. So after completion my 1 week training, I went to my job, and then I came to know it's a very, very much hard job. And what is the meaning of pallet builder? So pallet builder meaning is to build the pallets, pick the box from the floor and put in the pallet and make the pallet. And its length is approximately 7.5 feet. So it's a very, very hard work and very, very concentrated, should be concentrated on the work. So if we put wrong box, then whole the pallet will be wrong. So that's why there is a very much important things to concentrate on the every box. And the weight of the box, sometime too much heavy, sometime lighter, and sometime more than capacity of lift. So when I did so, every day I was tired. I wake up early morning in 3:30 to go for a job. So 7 o'clock I start my job, and 3:30 I finish my job. So in this period, I made 10 to 12 pallets every day because it's a task for us. It's tasks for every pallet builder. So during that period, sometime I feel too much tiredness, sometime I feel too much exhausted, sometime I feel very anxiety because this task the pilot builder task is very, very much difficult task for me. Not for me, every one person. So this was the my job. We made the pilot and wrap it and then send to the conveyor belt.
So recently, more Dollarama workers around the country have started organizing and like making more demands to their employers. What specifically are they asking for, and what's behind this new wave of organization among the workers?
Actually, a lot of workers of Dollarama demanding a lot of things. Because it was my also my experience, because during work I met with the accident. I feel a back pain in my back, so I rushed to hospital. Doctor prescribed me 2 weeks bed rest, and later on I again joined the Dollarama, but I could not succeed to do well job because it's a very much hard job. So due to that reason, I feel that my body will be not observe all the things and all the situation, because if I continue this job, my body will be not no more. So these things happened a lot of time to me, not to me, but also for a lot of persons. So due to that, some things come in their minds, because I was working as a community organizer, and I speak with my colleagues and my friends at Dollarama regarding their problems. So the same thing they happen. So they're demanding there should be a good healthy environment between the Dollarama. So there should be a good training by the professional delivered to the worker so that they can easily complete their task. And moreover, they demanded because there is a COVID-19, so they're demanding there should be rule and regulations, best rule and regulation to procure them during their works, like a mask, gloves, and social distance, and other things which is required by the law. So apart from them, they're also demanding that because it's a pilot builder is a very heavy job, so they're demanding minimum wages, which is I think so when I started at $13.10, it's not a good amount for them. So they're demanding they should be at least more, there should be at least more to more wages for them, so that they can survive, they can feed their family better. So this kind of this they're demanding, and moreover they're demanding that there should be a unionization. So if anyone has any problem, any complaint regarding their work and workplace and anything else, so that they can put their demand before the union, and then union can send to this to their employer, and there should be an amicable settlement, or either there should be there should be some resolve the problem. So this kind of things they're demanding, but some of them person cannot come because they're afraid they can quit from the job, they will fire by employer. So I speak a lot of people about this. So these kind of demand, they are demanding direct recruitment, best health and healthy and in good environment. And moreover, there should be a 3 breaks, because there is a 2 breaks. One is a 15-minute break, and the second is the 30-minute break. So that is not enough for them. So this kind of request, they're saying it's a request, it's a right, it's our right. So they're demanding their rights before the Dollarama authority.
At the moment, would you say that Dollarama is responsive to its employees' demands? Like, do they try and meet resolves, or do they?
No, because no. There is no. I didn't see anything else. They resolve the problem. They come forward to resolve the problem. Even they give assurance to resolve the problem. nothing has happened. It is still continuing. So that's why they are continuously demanding. Yesterday, I met with a lot of people. So at Dola Sawal, where the Dollarama warehouse is. So this is the demand is still stand. Their right is still stands. Nobody taking any action. Nobody taking any indulgence among this problem. So this, due to that reason, some people quit the job earlier. Because during my 1 year, I saw there's a lot of people recruited by the agencies, and after 2 months, 3 months, either 1 week, they quit the job because they know there is no any progress in their life, and there is less money, and the future is not good. So sometimes they feel that and quit that job after 1 week, 2 weeks, 2 months, because they know it's a very hard job. So I saw a lot of people met with accident over there. So this kind of incidents and this kind of happening among the workers, they feel themselves very low. So that's why they're demanding continuously, but nothing has happened right now.
Yeah, you mentioned that workers feel very low, very low. I actually wanted to ask you, in your time at Dollarama, would you say that you felt just respected or valued as a worker?
Yes. Yes. This is yes. Same demand. The same rights. We all says there should be a respective. There should be respect to the workers. There should be no pressure. No pressure. Pressure in the sense fast, quick. No, because they are worker. They are not animals. Okay. So they are not a robot. I will say so there should be know about that they are human. So as the capacity they can do that, because all employee are doing their best, they're giving their best, they're sending all the pilots very well. If it is any mistake has happened, so they remove it. So instead of that, they are demanding nothing. They are demanding only their little bit rights. So as we says, our right is to speech. Speech. Our right is to eat the food. Our right is to take a breath in the healthy environment. Our right is to work anywhere. Our right is to walk everywhere. So same thing, our right is equal work and equal money. So if I'm working same job, same in the same capacity, so I should be given at least that kind of capacity and money, so that we all can feed our family better.
And how specifically is the IWC? I know that you're currently representing the IWC.
IWC are continuously working for the betterness of the workers. Because I also did workshops. They time to time they're conducting workshop about the rights. Because before that I didn't know the CNST, so most of the workers didn't know the CNST. So IWC come forward about this, and they speak with the employees about their rights. They're conducting workshop. In workshop, they say, this is the CNST. If you have any complaint, you can file the complaint before the CNST. There is some kind of rights you must have. And if you don't have any right is violating, so you have to go somewhere. If you're not aware about this, so come to us. We will file, we will resolve, we will amicably settle one with this, your employee. So every week, every 2 days in the weeks, they send flyers for Dollarama workers, Good Food workers, for awaring their rights, awaring the new rule and regulations of labor law. So day to day, time to time, they are conducting workshop. Time to time, conducting, they speak with the workers, and they file the application for complaint of the workers also free of cost. They advise, they give advice, and by the senior persons or by the lawyer, or because I saw there are a lot of people met with the accident, even they don't know how where they have to go. So see, IWC helped them to file application before the CNST or before the lawyer or before the authority, which is kept, which jurisdiction has come to for it. It is the dream of the IWC. Every person should know about their rights, especially the worker who are working at the Dollarama, their good food, or either any companies. So their dreams to everyone should be know about their rights. And if anything happens, or if they feel their right is violated, so where they have to go. And moreover thing, they should ask to their colleges if you have any problems, so that they can resolve themselves. Like a baby, if the mother teach to their baby, then the baby will be teach to their sibling. So these kind of things IWC works for the betterness of the workers. Because 2 weeks ago they filed one complaint because the employer has a pain, and he goes to hospital and doctor prescribed him 1 week bed rest, but in that intervening time, he didn't get any salary. So his agency refused to give him a salary. So he filed a complaint by the Mustafa IWC member. So he received just his application confirmations right now. So this kind of thing that we can say help the IWC doing.
A big part of this effort to increase the protection of workers in Dollarama is also the fight against the third party organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Could you explain what the third party organizations are?
Third party organization in the sense, the IWC says they, because as per my knowledge, it could be say the demanding there should be direct recruitment. Okay, there should be no agencies. Some, if the agencies is here, the both principal employer and agency should be equally responsible for any mistake or any occurs, or any accident or anything has happened to the workers. So IWC also demanding for these things for amendment in the law, so that the agency and principal applicant should be full-fledged responsible for their workers. So as per the capacity of third organizations, I can say the IWC is a more important, participating in a more important role to create and to improving this things for the workers.
So there are also these like hiring agencies which play a big part in Dollarama's recruitment process, and I just wanted to ask how like they fit into the overall picture, and whether they have an impact on like workers' conditions in any way.
Yes, because what I feel that the principal applicant doesn't want to take any responsibility for the workers, so that's why they contract with the third party, it is agencies. So what agencies does, agency hire the employees and send to the principal employer workplace. So if I have or any person have any problem, so principal applicant always stand hands or no, this is not for me, go to the agencies. Okay, and agency says it's not for me, go to the principal applicant. So this kind of things is, this practice is very maltreated. So moreover, the mostly the tax deducted by the agency is beyond the capacity of the workers. And moreover, agency is not taking anything responsibility for the workers also. So this practice is very, very rigid in this labor industries.
So exactly how do these agencies work? Like, are they responsible for the safety of workers in any way? And, or like, is there any level of accountability that they have? Like if, for example, there was a work-related accident at the work site, would they be accountable at all since they issue contracts?
So agency, what the agency says, they says, okay, hi Ram Singh, because I mostly people from Asia, from Africa and from the Middle East, okay, they come over here, they need a work, so they have a paper over here. So what they say, there's a hearsay, one person say go to the Dollarama or funds, go to some place, agencies, they will demand to, they need a worker. So he went over there, they simply asked them, nothing else. They simply asked, do you have a work permit? Yes, okay, come on. There's no contract, there's nothing. They say, okay, come just tomorrow, okay, bring with your lunch. So you will start work. So this is the this kind of thing. So there should be a best contract between, if agency is hiring, there should be a best contract. In the contract, there should be mentioned all rule and regulation and safety guidance. Okay, Mr. Ram, this is the contract we are paying to you. You have to make these things. This is your work, and you have to do this work, and you will get this money. Okay, and after that you will get this bonus. After that you will get these things. After that you will get this. So there is no anything during recruitment of this job. They simply says, okay, come tomorrow. Okay, so come and do the work. So you will get a 1 week or 4 days or 5 days training. After training, you will give the task and you will finish it. So this is not enough for us. This is not enough. There should be a best contract. There should be a legal contract which all the rights should be mentioned. If we says we are hiring you, for what purpose we are hiring? What is my act? What is my job? What is the title of my job? What I have to do over there? If any accident has happened, who is the responsible? If anything is happening, if I feel there is no good healthy environment or rather there is no health and safety, so to whom I have to contact? So this kind of thing should be in the contract. Which is not right now here during the recruitment. So that's why they are demanding to direct recruitment, so that the company should be fully responsible for their employees, and they get more benefits like insurance, like health insurance, like a bonus every year, holidays, these things. So medical treatments, these facilities, which is not providing by the agencies. If we got hired by Canadian Tires, I hope so. I fully understand there should be, they directly hired and they have this kind of things for their employees.
All right. Thank you for your time, Gaurav. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that we may have missed throughout the conversation?
I would like to say one more thing. If this is very important. Important thing is the media participating a very important role for the raise the voice, because it's an independent autonomous body. Media like radio, printing, broadcast, print media, or on-air media. So they are doing they are doing their best. So as like, I would like to say every employee should be know the responsibility. They should come forward if they have any problem. Media helping you, organizations helping you, everyone is here for help you. If you come forward, if you come to media, if you come to the organization, so then and speak about your problem. So speak to your employer, so then the problem can be resolved. Because they all are friends, media, organizations, it's your friends. It can you help without adding your name, without disclosing your name. They can help you. So my personal and my request before those employees who feel a problem, they must be can come forward to speak about their problem. So if they kept mum, the other person who also suffering from same kind of problem will also kept mum. So if you speak out, then another person will be speak out. If you all are speak out, then problem will be raised, because there is a one voice and one, there is a lot of problem, and one voice can solve the all problems. You can understand what I want to say, I have to say about it. The media is come forward to help these people so that they write about their problem. So organizations come forward, they helping them. So they should become, but at least employees should be come forward. And so they can stand against these violations. If they stand against this violation, it will be resolved easily. The government will be resolved easily. Government will be help to these person also. If the government know, oh, okay, Mr. Singh has a problem. Mr. Singh file application. CNST, very important thing I heard. CNST say, I don't know what is the problem. I will know when you give me your applications. CNST is the autonomous body of government of Canada. It's resolving the problem of the employer. I am met with the accident and my employer is not giving me a salary or not giving me my benefits, so I can file the application for CNSST. So CNSST is the labor organization. So he contact with the employer and make amicable settlement between the employer and employee, so that if not possible, then they can investigate the complaint, and then later on they give their order to employer, sorry, CNSST.
Okay, this is the group who like the workers and like IWC, that you guys are trying to like appeal to them to.
Dollarama. Okay. It's protecting the laborers. It's protecting to the workers' rights, he says. Protecting to the worker rights.
I'm Joel Salmadal.
And you're listening to Montreal-based artist Tonya Ayer. This is a track of theirs called Flower Person Theme. Welcome back to CKUT on 90.3 FM. I'm Sarah Jesmer with the Off the Hour News team. A Muslim family was targeted and murdered in London, Ontario on June 6th. A 20-year-old man intentionally hit the family with his truck. Salman Afzal, Medina Salman, Yomna Afzal, and Salman Afzal's mother, Talat Afzal, were killed. The youngest son of the family, Fayez, survived. The attack was condemned across the country as an act of Islamophobia. In Montreal, community leaders have planned a vigil in remembrance of the Afzal and Salman family at 6 p.m. outside of Metro Park. The 16 co-organizers say, quote, "We call on the authorities and politicians to call it like it is. This is yet another act of terrorism against Muslim communities in the country," end quote. Many of these same organizers have rallied annually to remember six victims of a January 2017 shooting at a Quebec City mosque. We're going to revisit a conversation with vigil organizer Ihab Lotayef from the fourth annual gathering this past January, where he reflected on Canada's history of Islamophobia and the Quebec City mosque attack.
And I am a co-founder of Muslim Awareness Week. The vigil today we're having, the in-person vigil, is really only one of many vigils, commemoration events, remembrance events that are happening all across the province, many of them in Montreal, but all the others are happening virtually online. We decided that we need to have something in person to give those who want to come in person and connect, at least by sight, because we will be respecting social distancing. But to those who want to be there physically somewhere, we decided to have this vigil in person. It's going to be a short and sweet event at the same location where there was the big, huge gathering of support on January 30th in 2017, the night right after the massacre. So we're going to have it at the same place to keep the tradition and the memory continuing.
And what year did you start Muslim Awareness Week?
I have been organizing with Muslim Awareness Week for the past 3 years. Muslim Awareness Week started as an idea to take the commemoration of what happened in 2017 beyond just empathy and remembering, but to take it to a next level, which would try to deal with the core causes that led to the hate that eventually led to the loss of life and this tragic event that we saw in January 29, 2017. So Muslim Awareness Week is not limited to commemoration events. It goes far beyond that. It does a lot of work to bring people closer to each other, to have the community, the Muslim community, present itself to society in the way that it wants to be seen, its natural way, not as it is seen through stereotypes and only media reports. So we wanted to have people, give people the chance to see Muslims as individuals, as groups, as people who contribute to society, who have their concerns, who have their aspirations, who have their worries. They're just normal human beings like him and her, you know, not anything special. So I have been a founder of Muslim Awareness Week and a core organizer for the past 3 years. This year, of course, it's all virtual. And that is when some groups did approach Muslim Awareness Week, suggesting that we have a physical vigil for remembrance, and we accepted right away to be a partner, and went ahead and created the Facebook page, and there is a lot of interest in it. I have to tell you that we did not think that we'll get that much interest in it. So I just want to remind people again that even if our numbers are large, the space there is big, and we need to continue to respect social distancing. This is the third installment of Muslim Awareness Week. So 2019 was the first year. So it was actually a reflection on what we had seen in commemorations in 2018 that we appreciated so much, of course, but we did not feel that this alone would resolve and help society move forward. So that is why and how Muslim Awareness Week came into existence. Of course, we are very thankful to our many, many partners from outside the Muslim community who made and are continue to make Muslim Awareness Week possible.
He says the idea behind the week is to meet people where they're at, in a physical or online space.
Community centers, in their literary gatherings, in their churches, synagogues. So we don't wait for people to come to us, but we try to go to people to increase the impact of this outreach and connection and information that we want to give.
Can you explain maybe one or two of the events that you created to get past empathy and to the core of action itself?
Sure, sure. We partnered in one event with the Quebec Writers Federation, for example, where we featured in the event three Muslim writers, three Muslim very different writers. So that's a very concrete example that we want people to see that there's so much diversity. It's not like a homogenous community, as many people think of us as. That's I think a good example to show what we're talking about as Muslim Awareness Week events.
The federal government announced this week that today, January 29th, will be a National Day of Remembrance. How do you feel about that declaration, and how do you feel today as well?
Of course, I am happy that the day, a day of remembrance, and more importantly, a day of action against Islamophobia. It is something that we have been asking for from the beginning, from year one or from week one, I would even say. But I will reflect also on an article that I wrote in the Huffington Post in 2018. Which is around the first anniversary, I was talking to society and to the community and saying that the government will not lead. We have to lead. We have to make it de facto a day of action against Islamophobia, a week of action against Islamophobia, and then the government will follow. That is what happened when the government saw we're working hard to make society more peaceful, more inclusive, to act in a practical way, pragmatic way against Islamophobia. Only then did the government feel ready to act. I think that it is a responsibility on us all to work hard to make society a better place. And I would like politicians who try to use divisions for political gains to really reflect again and again. We have just come out of Trump's 4 years, and we have seen the damage that has done to the social fabric in the United States. And we hope not to see something similar in Quebec. There are those who, when they see the government act in the way that a denial that it is acting, they become more xenophobic and more racist. Take that into consideration when they are deciding what position to take and what statements to make.
What has changed and what has not changed in the past 4 years from the first time that we observed this day to now?
Over the last 4 years, we have seen both sides increase. The side of understanding, empathy, knowledge, openness to the other did increase. On the other hand, the side of xenophobia and digging their heels in the distancing from the other also increased.
He said the Quebec government played a key role in this split in society by introducing Bill 21. Many critics say that the secularism law disproportionately pushes out people who wear head coverings for religious purposes from civil service jobs like teaching.
It is a bill that tried to solve a problem that does not exist just for political gain. And at the end, it gave a lot of ammunition and energy to those who don't want coexistence to happen. I am a staunch supporter of secularism in its balanced, open way. The state should not have or be influenced by religion in any way, but that does not mean that that the state interferes with the individual practice of religion, and does not mean that the state ignores the Quebec and Canadian Charter of Rights. This is a very worrisome situation and can cause a lot of damage. And it should be opposed by all of us, whether we have a stake or not in the jobs affected by Bill 21. I think this is something about the values of our society. And if there is something I can call Quebec values, it is those values that were inscribed in the Quebec Charter of Rights that I received as an immigrant arriving here in 1989.
And how has COVID affected faith communities and Muslim community gatherings in your perspective?
Of course, COVID affected so many people in so many ways that spiritual communities were affected as much. There are so many people. I mean, we are different as humans. Again, and as I was saying earlier, we are different as Muslims as well. And in so many spiritual groups, belief groups, some people really are much in need of their spiritual gatherings.
He says he empathizes with all faith groups, like Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, and Christian communities, for example, because he says COVID restrictions make life just that more difficult.
To those who are missing that, and I'm really hoping that everybody gets a chance to get this spiritual support, religious need fulfilled one way or the other, as this situation keeps prolonging and prolonging month after month.
And how can Montrealers address and act against racism as we are all isolated, as we're all at home, separated from each other?
Spread positive information. You can do that. I mean, we are living our life virtually right now, so everything does happen virtually. Don't be tolerant to any hate or abuse you hear directly or indirectly. Try to know the other. There are so many ways to know the other that you are maybe have doubts or thoughts or concerns about. Spread the positive information to those around you if you yourself have it or if you receive it, so that we manage to really overcome the ignorance and the stereotypes that are the base of hate, which in itself is the base where such crimes as what happened 4 years ago are the outcome of.
That was a conversation from January of 2021 with Ihab Lotayef. I'm Sarah Jesmer.
What? My radio stuck on CKUT. I don't know. But nah, fix it. CKUT. the number one radio station in Montreal. We give you the sun, the moon, the rain, the stars and the mountain. CKUT give you the word.
Welcome back to Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Brian Jefferson. We have just a few minutes left till the top of the hour, and we're going to tune into a podcast beforehand. Make sure to stay with us for news that you can use here in Montreal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Silver Threads, where we are still walking, still waking, and I'm Carla.
And I'm Eleanor, and this is the show where we trace our present path through the people and stories of the past. As we ourselves, long-term radicals, learn about each other, from each other, and continue to walk, continue to wake. This week, we're joined by Sierra Ramirez. She lives in Washington, D.C., and is a proud collaborator with the Woodner Tenants Union and Ward 1 Mutual Aid. She's also a Skills for Change practitioner, working with colleagues, comrades, and friends to support deeper, less hierarchical, more sustainable interpersonal practices. As a tenant organizer, a personal coach, and a political educator, she supports communities and individuals who are ready to slow down and build power within their personal relationships, radical collectives, and wider social struggles. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks very much for having me. Really nice to be here with you guys.
Yeah, hi, Sierra. Thanks for being here. I really love that you invite people to slow down. It reminds me of the Zapatistas' idea of walk with the slowest.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful. So we ask all our guests up front to take us through a little stroll of your past of history, focusing on some watershed moments that ignited you to join a collective or join a movement.
For sure. So I grew up in Washington State, actually, and I was born in California. But I think I'm definitely influenced by growing up working class and, multi-ethnically as well. But thinking about, like you said, those watershed moments, I think like one of the first biggest ones was just after high school when I was trying to get ready to go to college. I learned that I wouldn't be able to get financial aid because my parents made just a little bit too much money. And even though I was living on my own and, you know, completely independent and so forth, I wouldn't be able to do that until I was 24, 25. And I understand that that age has only gone up since then. And so I had this period of about 5 years where I was just living. And I experienced and saw so much of the ways that capitalism abandons people to illness, mental health crises, raising kids on their own, things like that. And when I went back to college, I was really pissed off. And I wanted to do something about it. During that time, I also read The People's History of the United States and a few other books that really made me think about like how it's regular people who go and do big things. It's not like you don't just come out of into the world like a celebrity. And for sure, it's not the celebrities that get, the most important things done. And the other thing that I was thinking about with this actually was just maybe a year or so ago. So I spent 8 months in Palestine when I was doing my master's thesis, and that was in 2014. But I got to eat lots of amazing food, including fatayer, which are these wonderful little pastries that are like triangle shaped, and they either those stuff with like meat or spinach, things like that. So I was looking through this cookbook that my colleague there had given me, and it was like, well, let's try and make these. And so my partner and I are trying to make them, and I'm like, gosh, I remember this being like a lot easier. And we're like cutting up all the onions and cutting up all the parsley and getting all of this and getting all of that. And it's just like a ton of work. And we finally get them all made up and put in the oven. And it was like, okay, well, I'm pretty sure this is like a one-time thing, you know. But when it came out and you take one bite, it was like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever tasted. And that really got me thinking, and it kind of like rebooted my perspective a little bit, because I realized that the reason it was so hard was that it was just the two of us trying to make these things. And if it was just me, like if I was just cutting onions, it would have been super easy. If I was just doing the parsley or whatever, it would have been super easy. And I thought about in all of these different cultures that I was either fortunate enough to visit or be a part of, that there's many different food practices, especially that depend on this logic of having a lot of people doing a little bit together and having it be like relatively easy. And I was like, you know, this is really more how we should be organizing. How can we?
You were just listening to a podcast from Silver Threads. This is just a sample of their 19th episode with Sierra Ramirez. If you want to hear more, you can find their podcast at silverthreads.libsyn.com.
I'm Brian Jefferson, and this is Off the Hour on 90.3 FM. And before we go, some news you can use. And July 1st is approaching. It's the biggest move-in day of the year in Montreal, and rights groups are anticipating a wave of evictions because of the pandemic. There's a rally on July 1st in support of tenants facing housing insecurity, hosting by FratPru. It's an organization of more than 150 housing rights groups in Quebec. If you need to get in touch, they're on Facebook at FratPru or by calling them at 514-522-1010. And a Muslim family in London, Ontario, was killed by a truck driver this week. Their murder is being called an act of Islamophobic terrorism. There's a vigil tonight in memory of the family at 6 p.m. There will be different speakers throughout the night, and the event is right outside the Park Metro station. And there's an art boutique called What's the Pop that's looking for new artists to exhibit in the fall. They say they want multimedia works like paintings, drawings, sculptings, and performance arts. If you want to know more, search for What the Pop on yesmontreal.com. And the McGill student group is calling for insurance companies to stop insuring the TMX pipeline. Climate Justice Action McGill is co-hosting a protest June 17th because they say the pipeline is a, quote, global human catastrophe and violates indigenous rights, end quote. The demonstration is part of a series of similar protests set for next week. You can find out more on their Facebook page at Climate Justice Action McGill.
And you're listening to Montreal-based artist Tonya Ayer. This is a track of theirs called Flower Person Theme.
And that concludes this Friday's edition of Off the Hour, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective. The collective includes Brian Jefferson, Alice Wu, Kate Addison, Joel Salmadal, and Sarah Jesmer. For more information on anything you heard tonight, or if you would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 7000, or news intern at ckut.ca. Also, you can follow us on Instagram at Off the Hour, or connect with us on Facebook. Just search for us on CKUT.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
CKUT 90.3 FM is proud to rebroadcast the following program entirely in the Mohawk language. The Mohawk, or Ganyatgehaga, are the original people of the unceded traditional territory known as Montreal, or Chojaake. The Ganyatgehaga, or people of the Flint, have two communities close by, and they are working hard at revitalizing their language. This program is part of those efforts, and it originally aired in Ganasadage on RKR, reviving Ganasadage Radio. And now, listen to Chojaake's indigenous language on CKUT. Jen.